Welcome back to Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. Today we begin our third season of Dorothy's List, a series about the books that are nominated for the Dorothy Canfield Fisher Children's Book Award. Each month this school year, we'll visit with a group of middle grade readers to discuss one of the nominees. The kids themselves get to choose the winning book at the end of the school year. We start this season at Morristown Centennial Library, where a group of middle schoolers are reading Julie Barry's novel, The Scandalous Sisterhood of Prickwillow Place. VPR's Amy Noyes takes us back in time for the Victorian-era farce.
The students at St. Etheldreda's School for Young Ladies are there to learn to behave as proper maidens should. The girls' lives are mundane under the care of their miserly headmistress, but despite their dreary situation at school, there's one fate that all the girls agree would be far worse, and that is being sent home. So when their headmistress and her brother drop dead at Sunday dinner, the young ladies decide to bury the bodies in the back garden and keep the murders a secret. Thus is born the scandalous sisterhood of Prickwillow Place. The first thing readers notice about the finishing school students is that they each have a moniker they can't seem to shake. Actress Jane Entwistle reads the award-winning audiobook, and the list of characters is the first thing you'll learn.
Young ladies whom you shall be pleased to meet in this narrative. Dear Roberta Prattley, disgraceful Mary Jane Marshall, dull Martha Boyle, stout Alice Brooks, smooth Kitty.
Summer
Heaton,
readers at the public library in Morristown Louise read Dudley, The Scandalous Sisterhood of Prickwillow Place. We visited them to discuss the book and recorded their questions for the author, Julie Barry. 11-year-old Riley Hughes wanted to know about all those nicknames.
When you were coming up with the names for the characters, what inspired you to choose those names?
We put Riley's question and questions from other young readers in Morristown to author Julie Barry.
You know, that's a great question, and the answer is a funny one. The names that appeared in the very beginning, Disgraceful Mary Jane, Smooth Kitty, they just came to me. I wasn't planning to do that. It just happened. But then as soon as it had happened, I sat back and looked at it and thought, you know, seven girls is a lot to keep track of, and a little label might help the readers keep them separate in their minds.
10-year-old Chandler Follansby noticed that the characters can't shake the nicknames, even as they outgrow them over the course of the story.
How come the characters' titles don't change throughout the book, even though their personalities change?
That is an excellent question. I think there are some times when the labels that are used to describe them are challenged a little bit, especially as the story progresses. But there's a funny thing about names and nicknames is they do tend to stick. Sometimes it seems like your reputation in a group is a hard thing to let go of. And if you are thought of as the one who's bossy, you might always be thought of as the one who's bossy, even after you stop being bossy. And so I think that's why the names stayed the same, even though the girls grew and evolved.
So how did this group of characters go from being proper finishing school girls to being accomplices in two murders? Here's an excerpt from the audiobook that helps to explain.
You want to know what I say? Smooth Kitty asked no one in particular. I say, we don't tell these ravens and, what do you call 'ems, coroners. Let's not tell anyone. They stared at each other. Smouldering coals settled in the fireplace, sending up low sparks. Each girl was alone, for a moment, with her private amazement. Smooth Kitty counted her heartbeats as she waited for their responses. But the bodies will smell, dull Martha said at length. Sooner or later they're bound to. Disgraceful Mary Jane, whose green eyes had lit up wonderfully at Smooth Kitty's suggestion, gave dull Martha a little rub on the back. No, darling, they won't, she said. We'll bury them, right in the vegetable beds. They'll make a lovely compost, Pocked Louise added. Perhaps not so much this season, but next season the marrows and squashes will burst with juicy goodness. She scratched her nose thoughtfully. We'll just have to be careful this fall when we go digging for potatoes. Smooth Kitty's eyes darted from young lady to young lady, watching to see how well her idea had taken hold. She didn't dare congratulate herself yet. She must be sure where they stood. "Never mind potatoes. There'll be a scandal," she said. "An investigation. Each one of us could be under a cloud of suspicion for the rest of our lives." "A black spot," Dower Eleanor intoned. "A blemish upon our maiden purity."
"Oh no, surely not," disgraceful Mary Jane replied. "Not for such a trifling thing as neglecting to mention the death of a headmistress and her nasty brother. No one could really be upset over that. It takes much more fun to leave a blemish upon one's maiden purity."
"They'll think one of us murdered them," Pocked Louise warned. Smooth Kitty slipped an arm through Louise's elbow. "What I'd like to know, love, is whether or not one of us actually did."
And so the stage is set for the girls' deception. With such an eerie premise, Morristown Children's librarian Rachel Boer had this question for author Julie Berry.
"Were there any points in this book that you got freaked out or scared while you were writing because of all the mysterious deaths?"
"Oh, that's a great question. You know, I don't think I did. I think because I am sort of the man behind the curtain, if you think of, you know, the Wizard of Oz in the movie. Because I'm the man behind the curtain sort of pulling the levers and making things happen, I'm not as affected by the story as the people who are reading it are. That doesn't mean I don't love it and enjoy it, but it doesn't scare me in the way that, you know, I hope it makes the reader feel a little unnerved."
Burying two bodies, solving the murders, impersonating their headmistress, staying on top of a busy social calendar, and keeping up appearances for prying English neighbors, the young ladies of Prickwillow Place have their hands full. All that prompted this question from 10-year-old Megan Hughes.
"Why did you choose for the setting to be in England back in the 1800s? And what inspired you to have it be a boarding school?"
"Well, I have always secretly wished that I were a boarding school girl in England. I grew up reading so many books that took place in England that for me, especially the Victorian era, the mid to late 19th century, really feels like a magical world where stories are possible. And so I just have always loved the literature that came out of that place and time, and I was eager to see if I could write something that felt like it belonged there."
Be they smooth, dear, or disgraceful, each of the girls discovers that when they band together as a sisterhood, they are capable of solving mysteries, finding treasures, and most importantly, deciding their own fates. Which led 11-year-old Sage Simmons to ask this question that may be on a lot of readers' minds when they finish the book.
"Is there going to be a sequel coming?"
"I would love for there to be a sequel to this book. As of right now, we don't have one in the works, but I love to hear from readers who would like to know more about what happens to this scandalous sisterhood. I am certain that they continue to get into scrapes and possibly even solve crimes. So I hope that we'll have the chance to follow them on another adventure. I think they should take a trip somewhere, maybe to a castle."
Until these young maidens find their castle, middle school readers can delight in the farcical murder mystery that is the scandalous sisterhood of Prickwillow Place. For VPR News, I'm Amy Noyes.
And next month on Dorothy's List, Under the Egg by Laura Marks Fitzgerald. A hidden artistic masterpiece has the potential to save the heroine's life or destroy everything she thought she knew about her grandfather. Here's an excerpt from Under the Egg.
"I popped the last raspberry in my mouth and crossed over to the studio's defunct fireplace, where atop a grand marble mantel, a chicken egg sat in a small ceramic bowl. My first official chore in the Tenpenny House had been the placement of that egg. Every morning, Jack and I would gather the chicken's output and select the whitest, most perfect egg of the lot. The rest of the half dozen or so went to the kitchen. The egg of honor went to the mantel. Jack would lift me in his arms, and I'd gently place the egg in the bowl made by my grandmother, a woman I knew only through Jack's stories of her skill at the potter's wheel and her fine Scandinavian cooking."
That's an excerpt from Under the Egg, excellently read by People's Academy sixth grader Lila Hancock. Under the Egg is next month's selection in our series Dorothy's List, which is sponsored by the VPR Journalism Fund.